This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to a brand new podcast here on the Wrestling Feed, entitled The Chicken Salad. My name's Ben Locke, and you may know me as one third of the Special Relations, but please don't let that put you off from listening. In this podcast, I have branched away from the chaps, and I'm going to be looking at some of the perceived worst wrestling shows in history, and seeing if there's any positives to be taken from them in the modern era. I.e., we are seeing if we can make chicken salad out of some chicken shit. I cannot do this task alone, however, so I have two excellent co-hosts alongside me. First of all is a man who is significantly older than me and is known throughout the nation for his shit takes and opinions. You will have heard him on the Mothership, Freak Out Driving, Laughing Theatre and Talking Pop, to name but four. He's always a bridesmaid, he's never the bride. And is the perennial guest star and Mexican food purveyor himself, Mr. Sean Kidd. Sean, how you doing?
I am great, Ben. How are you tonight?
I'm all right. Muddling through technology. This, you know, first time hosting one of these bad boys. So we're going to get through it as best we can.
Yeah, we'll do fine. You're doing an excellent job with the intro so far. So we're off to a good start. And I'm happy to be here. I appreciate the intro, and I appreciate the invite to be a co-host on this pod because, you know, I am king of the chicken shit, so I'll see what I can do to help make chicken salad. So,
well, you know, that was a pretty good start. I was like, one take, I did that. I was like, fucking hell, get me.
That was really impressive, so good job.
Thank you. Yes. You're making me blush. On to my other co-host, who is a man significantly younger than me and will never know the joy of getting past level 10 on Snake. He is one of the nice guys of Place to Be Nation, although lately he has been growing himself an evil goatee, wearing some leather jackets, and hanging around with ne'er-do-wells. He is the Mississippi Mud Pie himself, Mr. Logan Crossland. Logan, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Beautiful intro.
Thank you. It's like I almost wrote it.
Something like that.
So, first of all, I want to put it on record, gentlemen. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this with me. Whoa, so, great. When we came to pick in this show, the first show, I asked the chaps, I said, you know, what wrestling show are we going to go for? And I'm right in saying it was a universal choice.
I would say the first one was pretty universal.
or at least, I think, it was maybe like somebody might have picked it second and not been first. So the first show that we are picking is the gold standard of bad wrestling shows. It is from 1991. It is WCW's Great American Bash of 1991. So I know this question is going to be quite quick for two of us, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Logan, what are your memories of this show?
Well, I was -2, so not many.
And I don't even think we got WCW to 1992, so I literally did not see this show until the network era. So I will ask the elder statesman of the group, who I'm pretty sure were you watching WCW at the time, Sean?
I think I was 5 years into my watching, so this was actually the year I graduated high school, so I love hearing how you're -2, Logan. That's fantastic. So I had been a hardcore NWA WCW watcher, you know, along with WWF. I had been to many of the bashes. I'd been to Bash 88. I'd been to Bash 89. 90. This was one I did not go to because I graduated and I think I was off partying, drinking somewhere. yeah, a lot of memories of this show because I remember watching it later on in many years and pretty glad that I skipped it. So this will be a great rewatch for me, or it was a great rewatch for me to kind of go back down memory lane of a time that I don't really remember because I drank a lot. So
just dull the memory with booze. That's the yep. way forward. So why does this show have the bad reputation it does? I'm going to throw it open to the floor. So for you, Logan, why do you think this show has a particularly terrible reputation?
I just don't think they've managed their time very well on this show. They really just kind of threw a few matches together, and it just didn't really seem like they had a good plan laid out before the show went on. So, I mean, I think it just wasn't very well planned, and you know, Flair leaving kind of fucked them. But
we'll get onto Flair leaving. But if I told you there was 11 matches in 3 hours, would that surprise you?
That gives me a bad thought.
I would think we're watching WrestleMania 4.
Yeah. No, that was 20 in 4 hours.
yeah, 20 in 4. You're right.
So, Sean, what are your feelings before the show? What before watching it for the second time, or before watching it anew, I should say.
So here's the thing: WCW was kind of out of, you know, I think 89 to 90 were pretty solid all the way up through. I even Starrcade 90 is one of my favorites. But if you go back and look at the prior pay-per-views that year, Super Brawl was the prior one on this, and it was a pretty solid show. And then they also had Wrestle War 91 with the War Games with Pillman that got injured. That was also a great Wrestle War.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, they had solid pay-per-views going into this. And it's interesting. I think this is kind of a turn for them with Flair leaving. Flair leaving definitely set the stage for what we're about to see tonight. And I think this is just a show to scramble and figure out, let's put something on the show, get out of this, and we'll move on from there. So it was a disappointing show at the time for the simple fact that the previous two shows earlier in the year had been pretty solid and pretty good.
Mm. Feels like they're almost trying to reset here, and the reset doesn't quite work.
It's almost like Spring Stampede 2000 is what it reminds
yes.
me of.
Yes, I mean, so you've both made mention of the Flair situation. So just to give you a bit of background about that, the show itself is broadcast on July 14th. Flair's contract expires on July 1st. So that gives you a bit of an idea of where we're up to. And basically, it's a power play between two gentlemen. It's a power play between Jim Herd, the producer, president, don't quite know what his title was at the time, and Ric Flair, who is the world champion. I mean, doing my research on this show, Ric Flair was earning $750,000 a year at this point in 1991, which, looking at contracts today, $750,000 is actually still quite a good chunk of change.
That's a hell of a salary in 91 WCW.
Absolutely. From what I've read, Herd was trying to bust him down to $350,000 a year. Now, not knowing much about business as I do, Sean knows a bit more about me. If somebody was going to try and get me to take a 50% pay cut, I'd probably tell him to swivel as well. I don't know about the two of you.
If I were Ric Flair, I certainly would.
Yeah, I'd tell him to fuck his pizza boy ass off.
Hey, now, so, yes. Like that. Sister brand there, Logan.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Logan, you're meant to be the nice guy around here, Logan. Just don't go there. One of the other major issues, obviously, around the time was Dusty Rhodes being the booker. And Dusty sort of knew which way to go, I think, in the war, and he sided with Herd. So that kind of put Flair, you know, on the outs anyway. You got the whole thing of, you know, the Turner executives not really liking wrestling either, that they were embarrassed by wrestling, even though it was the thing that was making them the most money at that point. You know, they weren't actually making, sorry, they weren't actually making the company any money, WCW any money, but they were making the TV money, which I never quite understood anyway. So there was the whole political play. Flair lost it. Flair's gone. So 14 days later, we have this show. And let's look at the show now, gentlemen. So first of all, the intro to the show. Very interesting. The one shot into the arena and the guy buying a ticket for nothing.
Gets it for free. I mean, what the hell?
I think there was quite a lot of people who got into this show for free. I'm not going to lie.
Well, the opening for me, you know, there was some big money spent on that opening. And, you know, the cameraman's running through the outside, going to the inside, you know, the screaming fans. I mean, bad haircuts and clothes. If you look at the time frame, the camera shot, it's like a potpourri of just bad, like, human, I mean, hair, clothes, you name it. It's awful. And then a pit stop for the free tickets is, of course, funny. There's a lot of people horrified and looking at the camera, looking all scared. My favorite part of the intro, though, is the guy taking tickets that thinks he's P.T. Barnum. It's like, oh, come in. We're having a great time. Come on in. And
enjoy yourself.
Enjoy yourself. So I think the opening was amazing right out of the gate. So
how much money would you reckon they got paid not to say Ric Flair's name during the intro?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, it didn't really matter later on in the show, as we'll see later. But
no, I think at this point, though, it kind of did. So after all that, we open the show with a scaffold match, of course. That's what you're going to open any pay-per-view with. And this is going to put our theory to the test straight away, gentlemen, of the whole chicken shit into chicken salad. It's a scaffold match between PN News and beautiful Bobby Eaton versus Steve Austin and Terrence Taylor. At this point in time, this is two singles feuds coming together in one scaffold match. So the scaffold match, Logan, how did you feel about it?
Scaffold matches are just never a good idea. It kind of pigeonholes the competitors in the match, and this one just... which wasn't very good.
I quite like the strategy, though, of Bobby and PN News by leaving PN News by the flank, so he wasn't going to try and waddle over the plank. That was at least some good. They were at least trying with strategy at this point.
That is true. And I loved how they kept harping on the fact that this was the first scaffold match that they used plywood instead of steel. I was like, they would use plywood on the first one with the big fat shit on one side of the one side of the match.
I mean, you've got to ask yourself, whose bright idea was it to put him up there?
Nobody. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Dusty had some weird and wonderful ideas. This was not one of them. Sure, I mean, Austin and Bobby Eaton were involved in a singles feud at this point. Could we just not have had a singles match between them instead of this?
We could have, and I'll probably bring that up later on towards the end, but a few things about this match. So it's the opening match. First thing I notice is the ramp is very long. It's like one of the WrestleMania ramps where they have to walk down like 2 miles, and what person decided to book a fat fuck on a long ramp and then have to buy him a scalpel to get up the scalpel? He's already out of breath before he even gets up there. So really bad booking. I think one of you said that earlier. And the entrances are odd. Did you notice throughout this show that they stand on this little centerpiece and they stand there looking all awkward until their music comes on and then they start jamming? It's just the most awkward opening ever, and it comes up very often in the show.
The one I noticed it on the most, and I'll hate it when we get there, to his match, was the Nikita Koloff one, and he's literally just standing there doing nothing.
Yes.
The guy tells him, you know, the producer tells him, you got to go.
It's so awkward. And then the match itself, capture the flag. You know, and like you said, Bobby and Austin are coming off a feud that not a lot of people saw, because Bobby won the TV title at the last pay-per-view, and then all of a sudden he lost it, and this guy Austin shows up and has it. So it was really weird how all that happened.
Yeah.
But it was really it was just Bobby was such an overlooked title run. It ended quickly. And you know, Pia News wasn't really feuding with anyone. I don't even remember the Taylor made man feud with him. This is like Taylor's 20th gimmick, right? he's a computerized man of the 90s, and the only reason why he's a computerized man of the 90s is because Michael Wall Street left to go be IRS because he took Michael Wall Street's gimmick. But this match is there's no saving this match. It's still chicken shit.
It's still the drizzling. I think we can all agree it's still in the chicken shit category.
Yeah, there's no saving this match.
Yeah, it's deep down. It's deep down in the chicken boo-boo hole.
I did do some star ratings for as we were going on, and this is my very first negative star rating, so I'm quite proud of that. I give it -2, and it was lucky to get that, damn it. So, after the match, so let's try and forget that match. We'll put that to one side. So, after the match, we get the first glimpse of one of the highlights of the show, literally, which is Tony Schiavone's hair.
Yeah, the blonde Tony Schiavone, or whatever you call it. Yes.
Beautiful blonde mullet. Beautiful.
I don't think even Jennifer Smith would fancy him like that, but yeah, it was...
I think she'd be surprised.
Some prime early 90s hair work going on there. And then some prime early 90s clothing was on display next. An interview with Paulie and Arn. Arn wearing the most beautiful shell suit or wind suit. I don't know how you guys would describe it. It was just so early 90s. It was glorious.
Yeah, I felt bad for Arn here. I mean, mainly his best friend just left, and now here he is. He looks like he lost his best friend, which he did, right? And
yeah.
He just had this great match at the last pay-per-view with Bobby Eaton, which was a hidden gem, in my opinion. And now he's got a team with Paul Lee against Hyatt and Steiner. It's like, how did I draw this Buckstick card? It's a tragedy.
How did I go from this to this?
Yeah, it's like you're one way. How did you go from one peak to another, and this is your peak now?
So our next match in the ring was the Diamond Stud, who you might know as Scott Hall, you might know him as Razor Ramon, with Diamond Dallas Page as his manager, versus another one of Tony Schiavone's favourites, the Z-Man. My notes, gentlemen, I've literally got just a match. Very generic, very plodding. Logan, how did you feel about it?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that assessment. It was pretty generic. I wondered if Tony was playing with himself under the table when the Z-Man came out.
Z-Man had a lot of ladies with him.
Yeah, he did. He did. He did.
Some very 90s ladies, I would say.
They were Klondike Bill's ladies.
big hair ladies for sure.
The Ho Train before the Ho Train was cool. And as well as that, the thing I noticed from the match was just the size of Scott Hall. I mean, that was a guy who lost a ton of weight before he went to the WWF.
Yeah, he was pretty beefy in this match.
That was not muscle. That was just beef. So yeah, very plodding, very pedestrian. I think I gave it a star. And Diamond Stud with the win, which you probably would expect seeing as the Z-Man was just enhancement talent at that stage.
See, I actually thought it was a little bit better than that.
Okay.
So, you know, first off, it's weird seeing DDP and Scott Hall in this era, knowing in 5.5 years are going to be two of the biggest stars in the whole company.
Absolutely.
It's a crazy thing to see. The other thing I really enjoyed was the firework stand sprinklers they had, or sparklers for the entrances. Because it literally looked like they went to the fireworks stand to buy him and put him on the ramp because it was so cheaply done. I also had a note about Bulky Hall, and I also made a note about they got a chick out of the crowd trying to do Rick Rude's gimmick, and instead of kissing him, they would strip the stud, and on Stud's tights was a big blue diamond right in the center of his package. So blue balls. I don't know what they were going for with the big blue diamond on the middle of, but that was interesting. And then and Logan, I think it's you that uses Great Value line. How do you guys miss DDP wearing Sting's Great Value jacket from Bash 90?
Another note about his tights is stud is actually misspelled on the back of his tights.
Oh,
his stud is STUDD and it just had one D.
Oh.
The word stud only has one D, but his name has two Ds and it only had one.
I totally missed that. I was too enamored with the blue diamond on his penis.
Yeah, we know where your eyes are working.
Well, no. We've got to make sure we cover all bases on 90s fashion. So I wanted to make sure I covered that. The other thing, I mean, I got a lot of notes on this. Zink, you know, like you said, with the 90s women, the theme song for Tom Zink is one of the worst all-time songs ever. You know, if you listen, the lyrics are, yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, like the worst, one of the worst theme songs of all time. It reminded me of Jimmy Garvin, who did that a lot in his promos. But I thought it was a decent match. I thought, you know, it wasn't a long match. I actually gave it 1.5 stars and stud one. I didn't think it was a bad match. I thought it was okay.
Well, as I could have gone higher. It was just the sheer pace of it that was like, especially after the scaffold match, I was like, you know, let's try and get this crowd involved. And, you know, all you've given them is this.
Yeah, I can see that point of view. But from a match, just a match standpoint, if I look at it as a regular match and trying to build somebody and get them a win, I thought it was okay. So I didn't think it was necessarily that bad. I didn't think it was total chicken shit.
No, I wouldn't. I would have... I'd say it's sort of halfway. What about you, Logan? Where would you go? More to me or more to Sean?
I'd probably go more in your direction. It definitely wasn't terrible, but you know, it you would have liked to have put something a little higher here since you started with such a garbage match with the first one. So
that was my kind of direction. It was the fact that after the first match, we just need to give the crowd something to keep them going. Speaking of big stars of WCW about 5.5 years later, it comes to our next match, which is the Great and Mighty Oz versus Ron Simmons. Sean, how do you feel about that Oz gimmick?
I got a load on this one. So Oz actually, the way they did Oz is because Turner bought the rights to Wizard of Oz. So they created a character named Oz, and he debuted at the last pay-per-view and debuted with the Wizard. And I don't, did you guys ever see Super Bowl where the entrance came out and he had Dorothy and the Lion and Toto? So the first thing I noticed is I missed them in the entrance along with the monkey, and Kevin Sullivan is the Wizard saying, welcome to Oz, welcome to Oz. He was just kind of there this time, but the debut was one of the shittiest things you ever saw at all time at Super Bowl. And again, I noticed the great fireworks that Oz gets. So he's this great being, and he still gets the fireworks and sparklers. Maybe a little grump. So that's my take on Oz. I mean, I'll let you guys go, and I'll tell you how I feel about the matches.
I noticed on the entrance, the music sounded, the bass line in particular, sounding straight out of Another One Bites the Dust, which is... Which you heard it. It was quite disconcerting to hear anything else.
Yes.
So this is literally a year before Ron Simmons became world champion. Logan, can you see that world champion potential in him?
I mean, he was looking pretty jacked in this show. So, I mean, I think he could have been a champion for Vince at this point.
I don't think
he definitely fit it from a physical perspective, at least.
Yeah, I love the shoulder tackle as a finisher. For him, it just works.
He has some really good power offense. So yeah. I mean, and the shoulder tackles at the end of the match were definitely pretty awesome. So
his power slam is one of my favorites too.
Yeah.
Sean, how did you feel about the match itself, Sean?
So I guess I look at it from a different point of view. Remember, I'm entrenched in this area of wrestling, and some of you weren't even in a sperm yet. So I look at it from a different point of view, and I look at it at the time and what it's building to and where it's going to go, like long-term based on the booking of 91, knowing where it's going. So obviously the crowd was chanting boring very loudly, and they should. Nash looked terrible, just lumbering around like a goof. But the thing about Simmons at the time, he had just literally had his breakup with Simmons. They had their blow-off match at Super Brawl, or not with Simmons, with Butch Reed as dude.
Yeah.
So they blew that off. So there's not much in the match. And I love the shoulder tackle like you guys brought up. I think with this match, this is Nash's, like, one of his first matches as Oz. I think they realized what shit they were that they had with them. And I think that's a good launching point for Simmons, because Simmons is one of the first title contenders for Luger at October in the Halloween Havoc, right? So
correct.
I think this is a great launch pad for Simmons. The crowd was clearly into him, and I thought it was a good launch pad for him. I gave it 1.25 stars. I thought Simmons looked great. I think it wasn't a bad match. I thought it was okay.
That's pretty similar to where I went. So I had this at one star as well. I was very disappointed that JR only gave us 5 football references in a run Simmons match. You know, I was expecting a bit more from him.
Well, you have to. He is, you know, Ron Simmons.
There was a really long one where he was on about Florida State right at the beginning of the match. I only counted that as one, but that could have been 3 or 4 on its own, to be fair. So yeah, as we've all said, Simmons wins with the shoulder block. But when after your first 3 matches, when you're only at 1 star, then things have to get better, don't they, gentlemen?
You would think.
you would definitely think.
I've not actually included all the wrestlers included in it, but the WCW top 10 was next.
I wrote them all down.
I
would love for you to go through them.
Go through it, Logan. That'd be brilliant.
All right. Number 10 was Johnny B. Badd. Number 9, Ron Simmons. Number 8, Diamond Stud. Number 7, El Gigante. Number 6, Arn Anderson. Number 5, Bobby Eaton. Number 4, Steve Austin. Sorry, I almost called him Stone Cold. Number 3, Sting. 2, Wyndham. And number 1 was Lex Luger.
So as a fan watching at the time, Sean, would you have agreed with that top 10?
Well, no. It's interesting that Barry Wyndham came up at number 2 already. I mean, I know he's going to probably give Luger his best match at the time, but he was stuck in a feud with Yellow Dog with Pillman, and they had a really good match again at the prior pay-per-view. But he was mostly in tags with Arn, feuding with Yellow Dog, and him being a legit number 2 was kind of bullshit. the other thing that I missed in this is Nikita Koloff's not even in the top 10. How the hell did that happen? Because he was in the hottest feud at the time. So he wasn't in the top 10. But Johnny B. Badd was, Diamond Stud was, but no Nikita Koloff.
Try and keep them foreigners out. That's the issue.
You know, and the other interesting thing is Barry Windham initially on this show was supposed to team with Arn, with Paul Lee, and they were supposed to take on the Steiners and Missy later on in the show. So him at number 2 is a real big stretch, but I guess it's by default at this point.
a wrestling company, not on the up and up. What are you trying to say?
Yeah, I'm just calling it how it was at the time.
how dare you?
Shit takes.
So let's hope this next match picks the show up a bit. It is a battle of the Rock and Roll Express between Robert Gibson and Richard Morton. Richard, now as he is, not Ricky, having joined the York Foundation. So you've got to admire his commitment to the gimmick by changing his name. Doesn't particularly change his look, but at least changes his name.
Yeah, that's a big miss right out of the gate on a new character.
Well, it always reminds me, the one that always got me was the Tanker when he turned on Luger. Never changed his look after, was still the Native American. And speaking of not changing your look, Robert Gibson still got the rock and roll gear on, kind of hoping for a reunion. It's kind of, you know, like the guy at the bar, isn't he, after 1 o'clock. She's going to come back to me, honest.
And Gibson at the times also, you know, we talked about Scott Hall looking a little meaty. I mean, Robert Gibson looked like he'd been in the country buffet before the show. There's a little mismatch there in size between the two at the time.
So, Logan, how did you feel about these two facing each other? Was it right that these two should face each other?
It just seemed weird, and yet you know y'all are talking about. You would think if he was trying to kind of split away from it and be his own guy, he would have changed his gimmick, or not his gimmick, but his outfit. You know, he would have. I don't want him to wrestle in a suit or anything. Be like IRS, but just wear some different kind of tights or something like that. I do really feel like he kind of changed his style. He wasn't as, you know, jumping around and active and going fast pace and all that. He kind of slowed it down, did some really good limb work. So, you know, he really got to the point where the he could get the crowd to boo him by kind of working a slower style.
I did put in my notes something about that. So I basically put he's acting like a low rent Ric Flair. Kind of like basically if Joe Exotic met Ric Flair, you'd get Richard Morton. That was where I was going.
That's a really good analogy, actually.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about the match, Sean? Because I really did like it. Like compared to the rest of the show. Let's go with that.
I did like it too, and I was trying to remember that time frame. So Rock and Roll Express, you know, Robert got injured the prior year, and then Morton started teaming with Tommy Rich. And I'm trying to remember when Robert came back and wanted to reunite, Ricky attacked him. You know, I almost feel like the problem with this match is that it's a few years too late. I mean, their peak of their popularity is gone. So, you know, if this match had happened like in 87 or 88, probably would have been something great. I know we brought up the legwork. I thought the legwork Morton was doing was really, really good. I thought it was a decent match, but the end is kind of shit where Morton's trying to use whatever toy computer that a five-year-old uses. And what's also interesting about the end is the ref clearly saw, because he turned around and he clearly saw the computer hit Gibson. So, and this was it for Gibson. After this match, he was gone. And then Morton pretty much became a jobber. And I think the only thing that was a highlight for him is he's in a light heavyweight tournament later in the year. But I gave it 2.25 stars. I think it's the best match so far.
Yeah, we're not too far away. I went two stars on it. Sorry, Logan, I cut you off. Go on.
No, you're fine.
So,
and the ref was noted rule follower Bill Alfonso. So
that would probably make sense as to why he looked the other way.
Yeah, he doesn't like following the rules. But yeah, I was really impressed with Gibson's the fire he showed in the match, because he did show right at the beginning of the match how sort of pissed off he was with the whole situation. But then, like Sean says, it kind of didn't really. It fizzled out and didn't really matter in the end.
Well, and it was really kind of sad. Yeah, it was really weird seeing Gibson be the face in peril, because if you watch rock and roll matches from the 80s, again, I know you guys weren't born, but if you watch her career, Morton was always the face in peril and Gibson was the one that got the hot tag, and watching Gibson as the face in peril was just bizarre.
They don't call it playing Ricky Morton for nothing, do they, you know?
No, they don't. No.
But yeah, I was like that, because it was very weird seeing as a heel. I'm with you there.
Yeah, it was strange.
Especially from the tag environment to the singles. You know, but that whole ending with the child's laptop, it was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that was terrible ending. Terrible.
What is going on there? But then after that, we do hit. A good match, gentlemen. A good match. I'm not even sugarcoating it. You know, this is like, you know, a highlight of the show. It's a six-man tag between Dustin Rhodes and the Young Pistols and the Freebirds and Bad Street. I really enjoyed the match. Logan, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a very good match. I thought it went a little long at points, and the eliminations were a little bit too shotgun at the end, but for the most part it was fairly solid, and I think Dustin Rhodes's work in the match was very well done. He's always been one of my favorites, watching back all this old WCW stuff. In the pre-match promo, I did make a note that Dustin was trying a little bit too hard to sound like Dusty.
I made the same.
We all did. We all three did. That's funny.
I also said that Garvin was kind of a precursor to Snitsky, because he kept saying it wasn't their fault.
And he's also big on yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was my second yeah, yeah, yeah of the night after Zinc's theme song.
Yeah, and he also kept saying he was sorry, so I didn't really understand that. But yeah.
I don't know why. We don't know what he was sorry for.
The crowd was really into the Birds, it seemed like, and especially Michael Hayes, or at least whenever he was hitting a DDT. But the ending of the match is a bulldog dropkick combo, and I thought that was really awesome. But what do y'all what did y'all think of the match?
So I really like the match as well. I also mentioned how over the Freebirds were, I believe I used the phrase over like Rover in Baltimore. There you go. So Sean, I'll tell you what, I don't know if you agree with me, Sean. The most impressive thing is how all six guys knew their roles in the match. So Hayes and Garvin were definitely leading the other four, I felt, through things, which worked very well.
Yeah, you had the veterans leading. And, you know, a couple notes I made on here. Young Pistols, you know, I mean, if you go back to the Bash of the prior year where they were the Southern Boys and took on the Midnight Express, the Pistols always had really good tag team matches. You know, Dusty and Dustin had just left WWF, so you know, I got to do the Place to Be podcast to watch one of Dustin's earlier matches in the WWF, and you could see it there, and the progression he's made to this was pretty phenomenal. And, you know, but Dustin's definitely being crammed down our throat by Dusty booking, and I do think it's funny that Dusty, like you guys said, is booking him like Dusty Jr. and him talking like his father popped me, actually. I was laughing really hard at that. The Freebirds are definitely over. I can't figure out how in 91 the Freebirds are over. You know, Hayes is so fat. I mean, he's just big and bloated, and Garvin's just terrible. He's always been terrible, but they're the six-man tag champs, and I didn't even know the six-man tag champs were around back then.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, and they were the U.S. tag champs, too. And, you know, I also, Brad Armstrong as Badstreet, I always dug that gimmick. I thought he did a great job with it because he couldn't get over on his own. And I think he was needed to add work rate to the match because the Freebirds and work rate don't go hand in hand. but I think it was a fun match. I think Badstreet helped the Freebirds. I think Dustin looked fantastic picking up the win. I love, like Logan talked about, the end of that match. And I mean, I think that was a move that Matt Hardy used to do all the time where he would kind of do the clothesline and bulldog, except this time it was a kick in the dink. I thought that was really cool. I thought it was a star-making performance for Dustin, and you can see in a few months down the road, he's going to become a star, especially around October, November. He really lights it up. My match of the night, I gave it 2.75 stars. I really liked it.
We match?
Wow.
We match. Logan mentioned it. Were you a fan of the quick fire eliminations at the end? Because I didn't like that bit.
It was irrelevant for me. I didn't think it needed to be an elimination match. I think you could have just done a regular match and still had Dustin pull that win out. But I just enjoyed it. I just enjoyed the work. I enjoyed the crowd that was into it. And I really enjoyed Dustin Rhodes, and he's way different than Dusty. He actually could work.
So, yeah. You can see why he's had such a long career, even in this first match. You can see it all there. He's just got it.
Yeah, you really got to admire his career, you know, when you see him in the early stages and how good he was even here. So
yeah. So I think at this point, gentlemen, we should have a quick break. We're about halfway through the show. We've got the two cage matches. We've got a lumberjack match and El Gigante still to come. I mean, if that's not going to make people want to come back, I really don't know what is. So we will see you at the other side of this. Welcome back to the second part of The Chicken Salad. My name is Ben Locke. Joining me are Sean Kidd and Logan Crossland, and we are looking back at WCW's Great American Bash of 1991, trying to see if there's any good to be found in this utter shit show. And so far, we found a couple of good little nuggets. Hopefully, we can make some chicken salad out of this chicken shit. So, let's have a look at some of the other things that are going on here at Place to Be. First of all, on the Place to Be podcast number 548, JT, Scott, and their special guest Kevin Patak are back at the home office of Madison Square Garden looking at the October 19th, 1990 house show. In the second episode of The Great Debate Wrestling, Andy is joined by Steve Willey, George Duncan, and Chad Campbell. Scott and Dr. G are back with the newest episode of the NWA Saturday Special, where they go back to April 2019 in Concord, North Carolina, for the rebirth of the Crockett Club. Episode 43 of Row 1, Seat 1 has Ben Zani joined by Robert O'Neill to discuss his life of going to live wrestling shows. You can also check out the Place to Be Nation pop feed with such great shows that include the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, I hope I got that right, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, The Year in Pop, Laughing Theatre, The Great Debate, Marvel Age, and so much more. Please subscribe today. And while you're at the subscribing mood, subscribe to these pair of tremendous podcast feeds from two of Place to Be Nation's finest. First up, Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position is the home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Driving, Telling Stories, the Brother-Sister Rewatch podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and so much more. Also, check out the new North-South Connection podcast feed brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It is the official home of Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, and much more. We have officially kicked off the 2020 Stretch Project, which will be determining the greatest WCW match ever. I get a feeling that none of the matches from this particular show are going to be on there, but you never know. You have till New Year's Eve to do your research, promote matches, and build your lists. Conversations and rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. On our social media pages, the Greatest Junk Food Tournament has begun. Remember to vote every day. Please be sure to check out Place to Be Nation every day. We have new topics and fresh takes, bringing you articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown and Fox Report, This Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, and Some Bloke Called Ben, and an Unpopular Opinion column. That's not very good, but, you know, you can go back to it if you want. And don't forget to read veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. If you're doing some online shopping over at Amazon.com, please be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it will take you right to their website and helps PTBN with no extra cost to you. And breathe. That is the read. I think I did quite well, considering that's the first time I've ever done it. Back, though, to what we're here to talk about, and that is the Great American Bash of 1991. Gentlemen, are we ready for some more high-octane action?
As ready as we can be.
I thought so. I was giving you the big build-up there.
Appreciate it.
So, our first match back from the break is the Yellow Dog versus Johnny B. Badd. For those of you who don't know, the Yellow Dog is Brian Pillman. Sean, what happened? Why did he become the Yellow Dog in the first place?
So he lost a loser leave town match and a tag team match with him and Elegante against Anderson and Wyndham. So I guess Dusty, I don't know if it was Dusty who booked it at the time, but I assume so, wanted to book the Midnight Rider, except this time he did the Yellow Dog instead and gave it to Pillman. And, you know, they had a pretty good feud there going Yellow Dog and Wyndham, but, you know, Flair left and kind of cut that feud short, and now we're left with the show.
Yeah, what I really liked is the fact that the commentators totally no-sold the Yellow Dog. It was like, straight away, Tony and JR were both like, oh, yeah, it's Pillman.
Well, they shit on it right out of the gate. Yellow Dog comes out, JR, you know, doing one of his famous, I'm going to shit on this, but maybe no one will notice, because he goes, here comes Yellow Dog. with a yellow dog, and he just totally shit on the engine for half the day. It was great.
Yeah, they pretty much immediately jumped on it and was like, oh, well, it can't be Brian Pillman, because he would be suspended for life if it was Brian Pillman, but he shares features with him, you know, so.
you could tell JR just hated this bullshit.
Just total no selling.
He was over it at this point for sure.
Yeah, he was definitely over it.
Logan, did you notice any difference between the wrestling style of Brian Pillman and the Yellow Dog?
Not really. He kind of did his normal stuff, you know. So I think it was pretty basic Brian Pillman on that one.
So again, gentlemen, like a couple of the early matches, this was just a match. Just a match to get both men on the card. Johnny B. Badd was, had he just debuted at this stage, Sean?
He had just debuted at Super Brawl, like out of the gate. Like, I had no idea who he was, and all of a sudden he disappeared on my screen, and I'm like, oh, who's this asshole? So he was up there with Theodore Long, Johnny, and yeah, so he just debuted at Super Brawl. So he had only been there a few months.
So Logan, what did you feel about the match itself? Any particular thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty basic. It's kind of like the Stud Z-Man match earlier. You know, it wasn't terrible, but nothing to write home about or anything like that. I made the note that I thought this would have been a really good match in like 96 WWF if Pillman had been healthy. But
great point.
You know, oh yeah, that's a good point. That really would have been.
Yeah, that Pillman would've... and then all the ankle issues later in his career, it would have been a pretty solid match between these two, I think. I just don't think Bad was quite there yet.
No, I think he was just getting the gimmick down rather than the actual wrestling skill at that stage.
He was still in diapers at this time.
So. So we move from that just a match to the next contest, which was a lumberjack match, gentlemen, between Black Blood, the mysterious Frenchman, and Big Josh the Lumberjack. I mean, 1990, everybody shits on WWF in 95, but 91 WCW had worse gimmicks, surely. Am I? I'm not the only one who thinks that, surely.
No, I don't. I think this is definitely gimmicky with these two, but I have some other takes on it.
I hope you all picked up on where Black Blood was from.
France, Oregon, yeah. Little town of France. I didn't know
Little
there was France, Oregon.
This is the greatest hometowns matchup of all time. The Northwoods versus a little town in France.
not just any old town in France, kids. A little town.
A little town in France.
Sorry, just taking a drink. So, for those of you who don't know, these two are obviously found fame earlier and later in their careers. Black Blood, Billy Jack Haynes, I'm right in saying, and Big Josh turned into the original Doink.
Correct. Before that, he was Maniac Matt Bourne in World Class, again, way before you guys were even a sperm, so.
I tell you what, Sean is bringing the goods tonight.
You're in my wheelhouse, man.
No, we're good. I'm enjoying it. It's like additional research. This is excellent. So how did we feel, Logan, about the whole lumberjack? Did we feel this deserved to be a lumberjack match?
I mean, other than the fact that Big Josh is a lumberjack himself, I don't really know that it had a good reason to be a lumberjack match. And honestly, I feel like the lumberjacks kind of took away from the match because they just kind of brawled the whole time. But the brawl itself between the lumberjacks was pretty good. And the match wasn't bad, but they put a little bit too much focus on the brawl on the outside, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I've mentioned the fact that the fans only seemed really into it when the wrestlers were brawling on the outside. The five or six different fights that took place between the lumberjacks.
Yeah, so I you know, before I go into Big Josh and Black Blood, I do have a note that I wanted to bring up about the promo before the match with Bischoff in the shower.
Oh, I totally forgot to mention that. Yes.
No, it's okay. I want to bring that up because this is Missy Hyatt had been running an angle where she kept interviewing Stan Hansen in the shower at the prior pay-per-views and kept getting thrown out and spanked and kicked out. So this is Bischoff trying to do the same angle, and he knows she's in the shower, and you know, she even has a great love note from Wayne from the Wonder Years, which was just, why was that even there? But so I said, Eric creams himself knowing he's going in the shower is sexual harassment, but does it anyway and gets yelled at. That's what I took in the notes.
am I right in thinking this was Bischoff's first show as well? Or might be his first pay-per-view at least.
One of his first, I believe.
Yeah, I was saying it had to be one of his first because he came in around this time.
He was it because he was in full Ken doll mode here, wasn't he? He was like, I'm so happy to be here.
Fresh off his AWA gimmick, yeah. Same, it's the same thing, Ken doll babyface. Yeah, terrible. but anyway, about the match. So here's the thing. Matt Bourne was one of my – I used to watch World Class Championship Wrestling. Matt Bourne was one of my favorites there. So when he came into WCW and he came in as a lumberjack, I shit on it right away. I was so pissed off. And also – Big Josh was also at WrestleMania 1. He took on Rick Steamboat. So a lot of history there. And then, you know, obviously you have Billy Jack Haynes also in the WWF. So if you had these two, you know, in their regular Matt Bourne versus Billy Jack Haynes at their prime, this could have been a great feud. They're both from Portland, Oregon. And I think probably in the Pacific Northwest back in the day, and again, I'm aging myself, they probably had a feud there. But I actually enjoyed this match. I thought it was good. I thought it was solid. You know, I love the intro where they said Kevin Sullivan's going to come out with Black Blood, but there is no Sullivan. He's not even there. I made note about the Lumberjacks in the brawl and a out of nowhere Junkyard Dog appearance. He's not even anywhere seen except he's a lumberjack. So that was really out of nowhere. I thought they beat the crap out of each other, and I thought they did some good shots. And another moment for Dustin to shine. He had Josh win. And I think that was another moment for Dustin in the match. I gave it 2 stars. I thought it was a fun match.
I went with 0.5 star. It was okay, but like, the theme of the show has been, it's been very lethargic. You know, apart from the 6-man tag, everything's been just there.
I don't know, man. I thought this, I actually thought this was a solid match. I enjoyed it.
But
The gimmick sucked. You're right, but I enjoyed the match.
I'm glad that we've all got the same notes about Dustin's interference. That was good because I mentioned that.
Yeah.
It was literally just a match that the fans didn't care about really until the Lumberjacks got involved.
Yeah, the fans definitely didn't care about it. You're right.
Yeah, but, the Lumberjack brawl was awesome outside.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
You know.
So our next match could have been a main event anywhere in the country. Featuring at least one favorite of JT Rosero. It might even be two. It was the Battle of Giants between the One Man Gang and El Gigante himself. First thing I want to talk about is One Man Gang and Sullivan's sex show get up. What was that about?
I actually wrote a Sid Nancy comment on the way they were dressed. It looked like Sid Nancy. So you're spot on with that for sure.
My exact note were One Man Gang and Kevin Sullivan are off to a sex show after the match.
and then Sullivan's promo, like, he's talking about swimming with the dead and banshees and death wagons. I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about? I was like, this promo is, I don't get it. But anyway.
Yeah, it was banshee for sure.
Yeah, he was out there. I don't know if he was, what LSD he was on, but he was gone.
he was taking, as the kids say, some good shit.
And what's even funnier about the pre-match is this is one of those moments where we talked about the weird stage, and Giant is just standing there on that little stage behind them while they're cutting the promo, just staring at him while they're talking. It was just stupid.
And speaking of the Giant, Mr. Gigante, he had some friends with him, Logan. How did you feel about the midgets?
Oh, they were cute little guys.
Well, they did earlier in the evening tease that Gigante had a huge surprise, and here we go, 4 midgets.
Well, Or they could be one man.
They're like, yeah, they're like Voltron and form one human being and just go.
I don't know if you guys made the same note, but the off-putting thing was that the midgets were nearly the same size as Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, I had a note of that, yes.
You know, I mean, I know he's not exactly known for his height, but this is like, Kev, what are you doing here, mate? So the match itself, Sean, how did you feel about the match itself?
Oh, man. I didn't take a lot of notes. Here's basically the gist. I said, Higante is awful. I will tell you, the funnest part of this match was his selling was an all-time comical. Like, he would take a little bit of a pat on the back, and he would sit there and stumble and walk around like he's all injured. So, for me, his selling made the whole match for me. But he wins with a clothesline from behind. I love how commentary JR and Tony are trying to sell how great he's gotten. And have gone, you know, and they're just... He's gotten so good. Look at that move. There's a hip toss. Oh, he throws him off the top rope, and then you clearly see One Man Gang throws himself off the top rope, right? It's bad. I found a lot of joy out of Higante selling. I actually gave it 0.25 stars just because of Higante selling. I laughed so hard at that, I had to give it something. But awful match.
I don't know if you made a note of it, Logan, but the suplex that made both men look about 4 foot nothing.
No, I didn't make a note of that, I don't think. Considering the two guys in the match, I didn't think it was terrible.
Oh my god.
I really didn't.
Explain yourself and defend yourself, young man.
I really thought One Man Gang worked his ass off. I mean, it wasn't good, but I didn't think it was like dog shit or anything like that, but JR was really trying to push the fact that Gigante's English was getting better, and he acted like that was going to help him win the match somehow. I didn't really get the correlation there, but he kept pushing that real hard before the match. But like I said, considering the two that were in the match, I didn't hate it.
What did you guys think of the awful, I'm going to use the wrench spot and hardly use the wrench, like barely.
Oh. Well, if I tell you what I wrote about that, give me a sec. One man gang very gently massaging Gigante's neck with a wrench.
Very accurate.
Was what I wrote. So I feel that's a pretty good description of what actually happened.
I get why Logan doesn't think it's terrible, and that's why I couldn't give it like 0 stars or below stars. I actually think there is some comical element to it, but I like how Logan took the wrestling element and what a great worker the One Man Gang was and said it's okay. That was good.
Well, I just really feel like he busted his ass, so
I didn't even think about that. You're right, so it's a really good point. I didn't even think about
that. You've got to give him a bit of credit, because they did make it at least watchable. It wasn't something you were wanting to switch off, really, at any point. You were sort of entranced by what you saw.
I give Higante zero credit except for his bad selling, but I can't give it to One Man Gang. Logan's right. He did a great job of trying to get the guy over. So, good point, Logan. I didn't think about it, so well done.
See, Logan, this is why you're on, Logan, you know, to change our minds. You've done your job, my friend.
Hey, Logan, how many stars did you give it?
It was probably still... like half a star.
Okay, so we're not that far off.
I was gonna say I won't say it was good. It definitely wasn't, but you know, I just don't think it was just dog shit.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I went dud, but it was nowhere near negative for me. It was just nothing redeemable apart from the 4 foot suplex. That was my highlight.
Yeah, that was a highlight. That was definitely a highlight.
Okay, so having gone from that match, we go to probably, I would say, the blood feud of the show, which is Nikita Koloff versus The Stinger. First of all, Logan, as Sean has mentioned several times, you weren't even born. I wasn't watching at this point. But that hype video beforehand, I thought was really good for an early 90s WCW video.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely got you into the feud and really got you up to speed on what had all happened before this pay-per-view. I was excited before this one started.
I definitely was. Although it was reminding me that I really should go back and watch Sting Luger versus the Steiners. That's what I got from the first bit.
Oh, yeah, that match is awesome.
It is amazing. It is a fantastic match. So a really good hype video. As we've mentioned as well, the whole waiting at the top of the entrance for you to walk down and look menacing was particularly in use in this match, Sean. Nikita Koloff not quite knowing what to do until he was told to move.
No, he looked really awkward, looked lost. I felt bad for Nikita. So that was probably one of the highlights of the really bad stage of the night.
So, I don't know about you, Logan, but I actually thought it was a really good brawl before the turnbuckle touching actually started, because they didn't really do any turnbuckle spots until about 5-10 minutes into the match.
Yeah, it definitely got off to a hot start. These matches are kind of hard to really invest in because it just with the touching of the posts and everything. But I liked it pretty good. You know, it wasn't anything special, and it definitely wasn't as good as I think it could have been, considering the guys in it. But I thought it was pretty solid.
I really liked it. I don't know about you, Sean, but I thought they were trying to be a bit cute though with the finish, with the whole simultaneous touching as they were going around the ring posts.
Yeah, it felt very tropey, right? That's the problem with these kind of matches. There's always some kind of trope to it where one jumps over and the other one gets it instead. There's always a trope ending to these things. So I don't really like that. I love that you brought up the video package. That was a great video package, and it really told the story from Super Brawl on to where we're at today. I was looking way forward to this match, but I found it to be very typical chain match, back and forth. And I think you both said it could have been better, especially with the heat they had for the feud.
Yeah.
And I hated the finish. I gave it 2.25 stars because I thought it was okay. And then, of course, after the match, Sting racks Nikita, which I didn't think was needed. But it was okay. It was just kind of there for me.
Yeah, I went 2 stars, so we're not too far away on that. The ref's lax rules annoyed me a lot, I'll be honest. You know, pretty much any other of these kind of matches you see, they wave it off, don't they, after the first turnbuckle if they haven't touched it within about 5-10 seconds. This ref, he didn't give a shit. He was just going to let him go as long as he wanted.
Well, yeah, it's like normally, like if before they get to that last turnbuckle, and it's like a 30 seconds. It seemed like it was 10 minutes from the time they hit the third one to get to the last one, and it was just kind of lingered. It was really, really bad ending.
What did you think of the ending, Logan? Right result?
I mean, it's the same ending I've seen in pretty much every strap match or chain match I've ever seen. So it was pretty by the numbers, I feel like. So.
Yeah. The crowd weren't really invested into it, even though, like, the thing is that probably the most overstar in WCW, the crowd weren't really giving a shit during the match.
Yeah.
The announcers were really putting over the fact that Nikita had never lost a chain match, and so I thought that was interesting. And like with One Man Gang in the last match, the announcers are working their ass off on this night, and they definitely deserve some credit, because JR and Tony are trying to make the best out of the show, and it's just not helping them very much.
Yeah, I would say this match is the disappointment of the night for me, because I think this is the one that had a really great feud into it. And I expected so much more. So even I gave it 2.25. It's probably one of the biggest disappointments of the night for me.
JR and Tony, to be fair, are like trying to steal our gimmick nearly 30 years before we came up with it. Like trying to find positives in things that there are no positives to be found.
But it was also really good to see JR, like that early, you could see the early innuendo of him shitting on things like he does in AEW now. It's great to see in 91 that there was preliminary, future JR in some of these. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, he wasn't quite the miserable old soul that he became at this stage. He was still quite.
Then, he tried to hide it back then. Now he just flats out shit on it, right?
Yeah, he's just a miserable prick now. So.
It's good.
I also made the note that Nikita Koloff is a looks like a beefier Goldberg at this point.
He did look stacked.
86, 87, Nikita was a monster. So
when does Nikita end? Because I know he's at WrestleWar 92, but when does
I think he gets injured by Vader.
That's it.
A match in 92, and that's it for him.
Yeah, I know there's not very long left.
Yeah, they do the whole face turn with him for WrestleWar, and then not long after that, Vader kills him.
That's it.
Yeah,
Vader killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
He pops up in TNA at one point, but I don't think he ever wrestled.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's something with Dusty Rhodes, but it was like
yeah.
And then, gentlemen, we come on to the main event of the evening for the vacant WCW World Heavyweight Championship, as Logan very accurately described earlier on, the number one and number two contender for that title, Lex Luger and Barry Windham.
The false number two out of needed to him to be number two. Not the real
But Sean, we know that there is a third man in the room, that being the Nature Boy.
Yeah, the crowd, I mean, even before the match. So a couple things. The crowd was clearly rooting for Flair while they were trying to put up the cage and Tony and JR were talking. What I really liked, though, I think they did a good job at building the world title match. I think it was good how they showed. What I really laughed is when they showed the big gold belt in the promo video. And, of course, there is no big gold belt anymore because Ric Flair took it. So, basically, you're seeing a belt that no one's going to win tonight in the video, which is funny. But I did like JR and Tony, and they sold the hell out of this. I like how they talked about both contenders' title history and matches at the Baltimore Arena. They talked about Windham at Crockett Cup 87 and Luger in 88, which I got to see. Live, and then I love the history of both their career-wise and their history together. And I feel like if they had more time to build over weeks versus, you know, a few minutes before the match actually started, it could have been really well built because they had a really, really great match in '89 at Chi-Town. So it's a shame because this could have been a great match with a great build, and they did it all on the pay-per-view after the show because they didn't have a choice. Mm. And I just think they did a good job of building it, but I think it was too little, too late.
I mean, I was really impressed with the previewing of it as well. I don't know about you, Logan, but JR and Tony beforehand did a really good job. And the video was actually pretty good, apart from the whole not the belt that we're going to be using thing. I don't know how you felt about it, Logan.
Yeah, I really like the fact that they were, you know, they really pushed the fact that Lex needed this win and this title to legitimize himself because they thought, you know, he had made it to the top, but just not quite over the ledge to be the champion. And, you know, they kind of put over the fact that Windham hadn't had many opportunities to go for the big title and that this was a super important match for him because, you know, he may not get another opportunity down the line. But, yeah, they did a real good job of hyping this one up.
So Logan kind of touched on it there, Sean. I thought they did a really good job in the match, in the commentary by building up Luger's heel turn as they were going. You know, the fact they picked up on the fact he was acting very heelish all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, and they did. And, you know, here's the other thing with this match. I felt really bad because on paper, like I said, this should have been a really great match. And you know what's interesting also about this match? If you think about Luger's trajectory, his great run as a wrestler to me started at Chi-Town Rumble 89 against Windham when he won the U.S. title. And for me, I feel like this match here is kind of the bookend of that, where I don't think Luger's ever the same after this match. But we can talk about that later. But, yeah, Windham is one of my all-time top three NWA wrestlers of all time in the Crockett years. So I love Barry Windham.
Yeah, I mentioned in my notes, and I don't know how you two feel, but Barry at this stage, still quite surprisingly agile for a big man. Some of the moves he was attempting off the top rope as a 6'7", near 300-pound guy shouldn't be doing things like that.
Yeah, that flying clothesline he hits towards the end of the match was pretty great.
Yeah. And what's even better for Windham, like I think his best year is still ahead. I think late 91, 92, the year 92 is his best year ever as a wrestler.
Mm. So. And speaking of great moves, we've got to mention a couple of Lex's great moves. The torch rack always looks so impressive, particularly on a bigger guy. And as well as that, the pile driver at the end was also a really good pile driver.
Yeah, it was deadly.
But the end, I didn't like the ending because Tony had to keep saying, Harley says it's time, Harley says it's time. We never actually heard Harley say it's time.
Well, then JR's like, well, we know Harley Race is the master of the pile driver, and he's telling them to put it on. I was like, well, okay, that's pretty random.
And what's Mr. Hughes doing out there? Well, we don't know if you don't know.
He's there for one of his brief shots before he's gone in another month, but I think he lasted longer than that this time.
I mean, did Harley last with Luger in terms of being the manager?
I actually thought that when Harley came down, it was for Wyndham, because Wyndham went into this match as the heel. He was a heel at the time, so I had no idea who was going to go for Luger. That shocked the shit out of me. I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah, it had been a long time since I had seen this show, so I wasn't really sure where that was going or not. I thought Luger won the match from my memory, but I didn't know what was going on there.
But I mean, I think it's very well known that Ric Flair has always said if he'd have been around at this point, Luger would still have won the match.
Mm-hmm.
So this was always going to be Lex's time.
Yeah. And I think, I really feel like this match, this was my match of the night, but I really feel like it shouldn't have been in the cage because they didn't really use it. Like you would like somebody to in a cage match. They didn't really throw each other up against it or anything like that. So this would have been a little better without the cage, but this was my match of the night.
Do you think it was one of those things like they were going to go for Flair, Luger in the cage once Flair couldn't go? They're like, oh shit, we still need to do a cage match.
Yeah, it probably was something to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing with this match, right? I was also my match of the night. I gave it 3.25 stars because I really do love both these guys at that particular time. But it could have been better, and honestly, it could have been 6 stars, and no one would have cared. They still would have voted, you know, they wanted Flair.
Mm.
But they did pop big when Luger won. I mean, the crowd went nuts.
They did.
It's definitely a historic moment in time, but I think it's history for the wrong reasons because I think this starts a really rough journey for WCW all the way up to the November Clash, and that's where you start to see glimpses of Steamboat coming back, you see Root coming back. I think this whole July to November period, this starts a very ugly few months for WCW, and an ugly few months for Luger too. It's a forgettable title reign, and he's gonna be gone in February.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And JR makes a commentating flub. Sorry to cut you off, Ben.
No, you're
okay.
He makes a commentary flub in this match. He says something like, I think he said at the beginning of the match, he actually says Luger dropped out of college because he got into a fight or something at Miami. But then later on in the match, he says something about him graduating with a 4.0. So I don't know how he graduated college if he dropped out. So he might have gone back maybe, but I kind of doubt it.
JR might have hit the sauce at that point in time.
So. Yeah, but by this point of the show, there's no rescue in it.
Yeah, it really is a shame because they really are two great wrestlers on paper at that time. So it is kind of a shame.
The point I was going to make was about Luger and the title reign. Because he never beat Flair for the title, it was kind of doomed to fail from the start, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, it was kind of a failure just because of that. He never got the title when he should have.
Yeah, and no disrespect to Barry at that stage, you know, like we've alluded to, he kind of jumped up to contendership. So it wasn't as even if like he beat Sting or Koloff or somebody who was around that level. It was this guy who suddenly just appeared.
He was feuding with the Yellow Dog, and now he's the number one contender for the world title. So it's number two. Yeah.
Well, that's not, you know, so it was always doomed to fail from that point, really, because and then he was never going to be on. And then, you know, when you go to feud with Simmons and you're not on TV for a while, but it was never going to work.
Yeah, and, you know, Race's Luger advisor made good sense because it's kind of like Luger could use some guidance, kind of like a J.J. Dillon figure for him, right, from the Horsemen. Mm. But it never took off. It was just never there. And their whole his whole feud with Simmons was built around racism, which was a common trope in WCW too. So it's a shame. It's just disappointing.
And the thing with Race was he was never a particularly big promo guy, was he? So, you know, did Luger need that silent manager type alongside him?
No, but more as a mentor for, you know, he taught him the pile driver, be a guide for his career now. I got
that.
Yeah, but it never took off, and it was bad.
Just one of those ideas that we can just shelve away and just pretend that didn't happen.
And then Harley did a much better job with Vader later on.
Yeah, so. He did indeed. He did indeed. But gentlemen, when I said that was the main event of the evening, it wasn't.
It wasn't? It
wasn't. We have one more match left.
Oh, and what a classic it is.
Still, we are still inside the steel cage as we have got... It was billed originally as a mixed tag match between Paulie Dangerously and Arn Anderson and Missy Hyatt and Rick Steiner. But... because we are in Baltimore, Missy Hyatt never actually gets into the match. The hardliners got rid of us for us, Sean.
Yeah, but you know what? So no intergender wrestling in Maryland. And of course, they don't like blood either. So Maryland can fuck right off. They ruin everything. But, but you know what? I like the symmetry of the hardliners carrying her off because they're the ones that injured Scott to begin with, right? So it made sense for them to do it. And leave
Rick. So
yeah, it made sense. So that was okay. That's about it.
Murdoch almost knocks the fuck out of somebody when he walks out of the arena with Missy too.
Yeah, he looks like he gives no shits and he'll just beat the hell out of anybody who goes near him.
Somebody grabbed like his arm and he like flinched for like he was about to knock him clean out.
Yep.
And Logan, I don't know how you feel about Rick Steiner, but. That's a man who has not aged at all in the 90s. He looks the same in 1991 as he does in 1999.
Oh, yeah. He still looks the same today. I saw a picture of him the other day with his son who got drafted or got signed by the Ravens the other day. But, yeah, he looks just the same still.
So, I mean, this was about 5-6 minutes at the end of the show. The time management at this point had absolutely gone out the window. Sean, this match feels like what should have happened with CM Punk and Paul.
I mean, for what they – listen, I'm always a big fan of any Steiner growing around, clothesline and power slamming bitches. And I think Rick Steiner did a great job. I love how he murdered Paulie with that last clothesline at the end.
Yeah.
But it really was a complete waste of time for Anderson and Steiner. I mean – you have two of the best wrestlers in the company and you're putting them in this bullshit at the end of a pay-per-view for like, what, 3 or 4 minutes and just a waste of some talent there. I did give it 1 star just because I enjoy Steiner kicking the shit out of people.
I mean, Logan, I don't know how you felt about it, but yeah, 3 or 4 minutes at the end and a waste of both guys' talents.
Yeah, how dare you call it a clothesline? That was a Steiner line.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Steiner line, boy.
I made the note that I thought Rick and Arn could have been a pretty good match if they had been given any semblance of time. But, yeah, it just wasn't given enough time. But, yeah, it was nice to see Paulie get murdered by a good old Steiner line.
That was a great – because he killed him with it. It was really, really fun, yeah.
Yeah, because he killed Arn with one before. That was a pretty good one. But like you say, the one to finish the match on Paul E was spectacular.
Dude, 89, 90s, 91 Steiners, 92, they just killed everybody.
Yeah.
They didn't care.
When I went back and watched them 93 Raws when they first started, they were one of my favorite things with the Steiner jobber squashes.
Yeah, them at the Head Shriekers of WrestleMania 9 is probably my favorite match because they just beat the shit out of each other. So, good stuff. I love the Steiners.
And that, gentlemen, is the end of the show. But it's not the end of our show because we have some awards and some salad or shit to give out, if you will. So, our awards. So, our first award is for the match that will make the Grest Chicken Salad. So, you're basically your favorite match of the night. I'll go to you first, Logan.
I'm going to go with Luger and Windham on that one. I thought that was a really, really good match. despite the fact that it was in a cage.
Sean?
Yeah, you know, I really, really enjoyed the six-man, but the title match, because it was two of my favorite wrestlers at the time, and I thought they did a pretty good job in a really bad circumstance. I'm giving it to the main event, the title match, Luger.
Ah, well, I went with the six-man, but I am happily to be outvoted. It's we are a democracy here. 2-1. Well done to the world title match. They made the best out of the bad situation that they were put into. I think we can all agree on that.
Absolutely.
So, Sean, who is your wrestler of the night?
Dustin. I think Dustin shined in this. He shined in the six-man, and he also shined in the fantastic Big Josh and Black Blood match. So, very clear that Daddy's booking, but Dustin's bringing the goods, so it doesn't feel like, oh, God, we got to. It's not like an Errol Watts moment. It's a good thing.
So, Dustin. It's actually a good bit of nepotism going on here.
A little bit, yeah.
Logan?
I went Dustin Rhodes as well. He really showed out in that match, and then even later he made the Lumberjack match entertaining.
It's a clean sweep for Mr. Dustin Rhodes, because I also went with Dustin. Like you say, I thought he brought the fire in that six-man. I could even forgive the promo, you know, trying to sound like his daddy. Just stop that, Dustin, but the actual match was really good. And yes, and then came back in the Lumberjack match and was a difference maker. Okay, so Logan, a match that was chicken shit then and still is chicken shit.
I went with the scaffold match. There's no high points on that one.
The only high point was the fact they were high up.
Yep.
Sean, what about you?
Oh, no doubt the scaffold match. The scaffold match, definitely.
I feel bad for putting Bob Eaton and Steve Austin in the worst of any category, but yes, I also went with the scaffold match.
Let's waste talent. That's the theme of the night.
Well, you know, I mean, I think I mentioned it earlier on. They should have just done the singles match between the two. Mm-hmm. You know, if they'd have rejigged the show about a bit, which we'll get onto in a second, but they could have made it watchable, you know, at least watchable. Okay, Sean, how about your worst wrestler of the night?
Oh, I have to give it to Elegante. He's so bad, and even though he sells, I mean, his selling, I gave him a good grade because of his selling, but it's because his selling's so comically bad. He's Elegante's awful.
But his English is so much better.
Yeah, no, he's terrible. He's terrible.
Logan, how about you?
I'm going to go a bit controversial on this one, probably just because I've never been able to give it to this guy again. But I'm going to go with Steve Austin, because he did not give a shit in that scaffold.
Wow, that is a hot take. Wow.
He did not give a shit in that match, and he seemed so checked out, and it took me out of it completely.
Do you really blame him? I mean, that's,
yeah, no, I mean, no, but, you know, he could have at least tried.
He literally did not want to be there, did he? I think we can all see that. I went with Elegante as well, but I'm quite liking Austin, actually. That's quite a good one.
I mean, Elegante is the correct answer, but. But. I'm going to go with Austin.
Okay, so our next category, the most surprising match of the night, or the match that you thought was going to be shit going in, but actually turned out to be quite decent. Sean.
I said it earlier. I really like Black Blood versus Josh, so that's fine. I thought it was good.
Logan?
I'm going to go controversy on this one, too. I'm going to go One Man Gang Gigante.
Oh. Oh,
I feel like I should be the interviewer and go, I'm just going to ask one question. Why?
Because One Man Gang's my man. He worked his ass off. One Man Gang for life.
See, I went for Morton versus Gibson. Only because of the fact that they are two tag workers. You're not talking like a Beautiful Bobby situation here where it's two tag workers who are known for their tag work, and I hadn't seen to that point the Morton Flair stuff, so I went Morton Gibson.
Interesting. Three difference. That's pretty cool.
Okay, but so what we got? Either the one man gang Gigante and Blood versus Josh. I could be changed to Blood versus Josh.
I could be changed to the Rock and Roll match, but you
know. Oh, hello. Okay. Well, if Logan could be changed,
So the Rock and Roll match. Listen, the Rock and Roll match to me wasn't surprising. It was what it was. Black Blood and Josh, surprising.
Yeah, I get Sean's point on that one. We can go with the Big Josh match.
Old man Sean wasn't surprised by the R&R, but since you guys weren't born yet, I probably understand why you'd be surprised by it.
I was gonna side with my boss, but seeing as we'll all go with Big Josh and Black Blood now.
That had no right to be any semblance of good whatsoever.
Okay, and our final award of the evening is the stylistic choice of the night. So obviously we're talking some early 90s fashion going on here. Logan, was there anything in particular that stood out to you?
I did make a note that Bobby Eaton and PN News' outfits in the opening match looked like child's wallpaper in their bedroom in the 90s, possibly. I thought they were wearing some good wallpaper tracksuits, so I'll go with those two.
Sean, how about you?
I was thoroughly enthralled with the opening montage with the cameraman. There was so much potpourri of bad fashion and hair. Like, it's hard to pick one because it was all there in one camera shot for you the whole time. So I'm going with every single person in that opening montage with the cameraman.
They all win.
They all win. Yes.
I had a top three. So number three, DDP's outfit, the American, the Sting wannabe.
Yeah, the outfit. Great value Sting jacket. That's a top contender.
Two, Paul Lee's shell suit. That was just spectacular. You know, in an era of wrestling, or a company of wrestling that's not particularly known for being colourful, that was just brilliant. And, of course, Mr. Tony Schiavone and that hair.
They're all good.
Are you ever going to see something like that?
Those are all good. Those are all good contenders.
So, looking back now, how do we, with the 2020 eyes, Logan, how are you feeling about this show, having watched it again?
It's still a pretty rough show to get through. There are some highlights. I did enjoy watching it. It kind of drags in the middle, but the title match and, you know, the quickness of the final match aren't too terrible. but I enjoyed myself, so.
So, Sean, is this show still chicken shit, or is there a bit of chicken salad in there?
Is it still chicken shit? Yes, but there is chicken salad. It's not an all-time worst show, as everyone perceives. There are shows out there that are much worse. There's good comedy. You know, you have El Gigante, who came with his selling. You have historical value. You have a great six-man. Good launch pads for Simmons and Dustin. A good main event and a blow-off to the Rock and Roll feud. And I got five matches over 2 stars. So for me, it's an okay show. Would I go out of the way to watch it again? Probably not, but I enjoyed it this time for the most part.
And then, you gotta find some good somewhere.
Yeah. And then Logan brought up earlier about the tournament. I would have taken, you know, 8 of them, like Sting, Luger, Arn, Steiner, Koloff, Wyndham, Eaton, and Yellow Dog, and just do an eight-man tournament. You still could have done your six-man tag. You could have had Austin defend his TV title against Z-Man or something and take out a bunch of the other crap. So there's a lot of stuff they could have done. We're not fantasy booking, but there's a ton of stuff they could have done. And probably in the moment, they just didn't think through it.
I mean, I don't know how you both feel, but they specifically mentioned the top 10 in the show. So you could quite easily have took the 8 top contenders from that top 10 and made a tournament with it and broke it up with the 6-man and the mixed tag match as well for your breaks for the quarterfinals and semifinals.
And you could, but the problem with the top 10 is you had Nikita Koloff beat one of your top baby faces. He's not even in the top 10, but you have Diamond Stud and Johnny B. Bad. So.
Yeah, and you could have stuck with Luger and Windham because it was a good match, but you know it just kind of got there in a convoluted way.
You could have had them. You could have had them too as like the final of it. I definitely would agree with that.
Yeah.
You could have had Sting Nikita, and Sting wins the match, and then Sting goes on to face Windham, and then Nikita costs in the match. You know what I mean? There's so much he could have done in a tournament.
So many
stories.
There are so many stories. So that, ladies and gentlemen, was WCW The Great American Bash 1991. Is it the worst show of all time? No, I don't think it is. I think we broke it down rather well. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen. It's been a blast.
Yeah, it was a good time. I enjoyed it. It was a pleasure.
I don't know if you've got anything you would like to plug, Logan, while you're here.
I might have something coming down the line that you boys might help me with, but I'll keep that under wraps for now. I also may be making a Laughing Theater guest spot, so be on the lookout for that.
Plenty going on. Sean, anything from you?
So probably by the time everyone hears this, the latest Special Relations will be on.
Yeah,
those guys. So with my friend Ben, right? Which was a pretty fun episode. So hopefully everybody enjoyed that. And I have an upcoming Freak Out Drive-In with Jenny. Probably comes out in another couple weeks where we watch Pet Sematary, which was a lot of fun as well. And I think Jenny got legit scared watching it. So that was always entertaining. you know, it's always good when you have killer children killing their parents. That's always freaky. So those would be the two. And then randomly, I'll probably pop up on Laughing Theaters and every other generic, you know, appearance that I get to make because I'm just a tag along until now. So this is my first real podcast as part of the crew. So thanks for having me. I truly enjoyed it.
Well, thank you very much for agreeing to do it with me and for bringing the historical context that we needed.
Yeah, that wasn't even done on purpose, but hopefully that added to it.
So, as Sean mentioned, the latest edition of the Special Relations will have dropped by the time this podcast comes out. A good time was had by all. Many Mafia mentions. We are part of the family, I think, Sean. I think it's safe to say.
Yeah, I think there's a really good discussion around good murders, which is really good.
Logan, guess what? We discovered we really like good murders. Yeah. None of those shabby amateur hour ones. Good professional murders are our thing.
One of the many fun conversations in that episode.
I mean, this will be a shock to people who have heard that show, but we do go off on tangents and we don't necessarily talk about the topics we should be.
No, we try, but then we lose it, which is fine.
We did.
Those are the best ones, guys.
They really are. I mean, like tonight. Well, tonight was good. I kept it on topic pretty much all the way through, which I'm quite pleased about. I don't usually, you boys. That's it. That's a no. Carry on. Okay, I think it's time to wrap things up. So, from Logan Crosland and Sean Kidd, my name has been Ben Locke. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, in a world where you can be anything you want to be kind. Thank you for listening. Stay safe. Well, lover.
a fact. Yes, we're lovers. That is that.